You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.
Spanning the globe to bring you the latest developments in medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja.
We love the herb.
It's time for the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Now, here's your host, Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Wednesday, December 20th, 2017, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the program. So glad you could join us today as we wind up the rest of 2017. What an eventful year it has been. And, of course, 2018 is shaping up to be a great year as well. We may have legal marijuana in the state of Vermont as of next month. The governor, the head of the Senate, the head of the House, they all seem to be on the same page here. We may get our first marijuana legalization state, not by initiative through the citizens, but through a legislature. So that will be a huge development. We'll keep you posted on that next year. Also, some developing news with regard to marijuana policy project. You may recall back in 2010, there was a huge scandal with MPP involving its founder and executive director, Rob Campia, regarding sexual harassment in the workplace. That is resurfacing now that we have the Me Too movement and the excommunication, if you will, of various men in power who were serial sexual harassers. There's a story up on AskAManager.com from Allison Green, who was the former chief of staff from Marijuana Policy Project. And we're going to digest all this information and get it all put together for you for Friday's show. So we're looking forward to that. We'll discuss the Me Too movement and the cannabis movement and whether or not there will be any reckoning. Now, on today's show, we have got a very special guest joining us. He is the author of Hempbound and Too High to Fail, the New York Times bestsellers. It's Doug Fine, industrial hemp expert, will be joining us in our Hemp Day Hump Day update, the last one of 2017. So we're going to tell you about three states that are moving forward on their industrial hemp programs. Also, we're going to take a look back at 2017 and some of the biggest developments in industrial hemp. Coming up on the Radical Rant today, I'm going to tell you about the cost of one Georgia police officer's bust of somebody for a quarter ounce of weed. They were bragging about it today on their Facebook page, so I'm going to let the Georgia taxpayers know just how much that cost them and how futile that action was. Also, we got more drug war data mining on the National Survey on Drug Use and Health regarding Colorado and Washington's teens' perception of marijuana use. But let's start things off, as always, with the cannabis headline news.
This is your cannabis headline news, brought to you by MarijuanaMoment.net, the complete source for all your marijuana news in one morning newsletter from Marijuana Majority founder Tom Angel. Subscribe today for free at MarijuanaMoment.net.
This is your cannabis headline news for Wednesday, December 20th, 2017. I'm Russ Belville. A new directive from the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs, the VA, urges government doctors to, quote, discuss with the veteran marijuana use due to its clinical relevance to patient care and discuss marijuana use with any veterans requesting information about marijuana, end quote. However, the policy reiterates the department's long-held position that, quote, to comply with federal laws such as the Controlled Substances Act, providers are prohibited from completing forms or registering veterans for participation in a state-approved marijuana program, end quote. In fact, no provision of federal law blocks the department from allowing its doctors to fill out medical cannabis recommendation forms in states where it is legal, even under continued federal prohibition. In 2003, the U.S. Supreme Court let stand a federal ruling finding that doctors have a First Amendment right to recommend medical cannabis to patients as long as they don't actually provide marijuana. The only thing standing in the way of government doctors recommending medical cannabis to veterans is the VA's own internal policy, which the department's Veterans Health Administration just extended with this new directive. Dr. Ben Carson, the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, said in a speech last week that the war on drugs undermines efforts to combat poverty.
It also didn't help that the war on poverty sometimes conflicted with the war on drugs, which often dealt harshly with nonviolent offenders, taking men away from their families and disproportionately affecting minority communities.
The comments are somewhat surprising coming from Carson, who, during the course of his failed campaign to win the 2016 Republican presidential nomination, often criticized efforts to reform marijuana and drug policies.
To legalize marijuana, it's a recreational drug. I'm going to tell you, as a neuroscientist, that is not true. You know, there have been many studies that have demonstrated that regular exposure to cannabis in a developing brain can cause significant damage, including drops in IQ. Now, we already have enough people with low IQs, so we don't need to be cultivating that in our society right now. That's craziness. But we
teen over-ingestion of cannabis leading to medical treatment is, quote, increasing, and that is a concern, end quote, says Dr. Robert Hendrickson, Associate Medical Director of the Oregon Poison Center. Quote, on the other hand, he added, 70 cases for the entire state in a whole year is pretty small, end quote. A story in the Oregonian notes that teen over-ingestion cases hit 40 total in 2015, rising to about 70 adolescents between ages 13 and 19 who sought treatment in an emergency room or called the Oregon Poison Center over symptoms such as anxiety, agitation, and hallucinations. Though the emergency cases are up, marijuana use among Oregon adolescents have remained flat over the past 5 years, according to state health officials. A report published last week noted a slight increase in use of cannabis by teens nationwide in 2017. Attorney General Jeff Sessions claimed that more car accidents were caused by drugs than alcohol for the first time in 2016, but the report his office cited as support didn't show that, according to factcheck.org. The report shows alcohol, not drugs, was present in the system of more drivers killed in car crashes. It also doesn't say the fatal accidents were caused by drugs. It's more difficult to prove a person is under the influence of drugs than alcohol while driving. During a private Q&A with interns at the Department of Justice, Sessions made this claim. ABC News made a video of the event public on December 7th after a FOIA request. In response to a question about marijuana legalization, Sessions says there's, quote, this view that marijuana is harmless, adding that car accidents were, quote, caused by more drugs than alcohol, end quote, in 2016. Virgin Islands Senator Positive Nelson, a stalwart proponent of marijuana legalization, announced Monday he would be running for governor of the United States territory. Quote, I have offered the VI Infrastructure Reconstruction Plan, reads an announcement on his official Senate website, a sustainable economic revitalization strategy. I have offered legalization of marijuana, the fastest economic trend, social revolution, and evolution in healthcare, end quote. This has been your Cannabis Headline News for Wednesday, December 20th, 2017. I'm Russ Belville.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. The Marijuana Agenda is a listener-supported independent podcast brought to you by Radical Russ Media, LLC. Subscribe to our VIP feed at MJAgenda.com for access to our ad-free podcast segment archive. Make a one-time donation to support the Marijuana Agenda at paypal.me/radicalruss. The Marijuana Agenda, like the conservative agenda, minus the hypocrisy.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal Potland, Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House.
Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com, City of Portland, permit number 17-159855.
Promoting the end of adult cannabis prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It's even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more on this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
All right, welcome back to the Drug War Data Mines for today. We're taking more of a look at the National Survey on Drug Use and Health for 2017. And the spreadsheet that you see up on the screen right now is one that I've been curating since about 2008. I've gathered information from various surveys throughout the years and correlated it all into one location. This spreadsheet is available to my VIP subscribers at the Patreon site at mjagenda.com. And you'll be able to download this and use this for yourself. Quick little guide here. The medical marijuana states are listed in light green, like New Jersey or Maryland, and the legal states are in dark green, like Colorado or Washington. Any number you see that is in light green represents the bottom 10. Any number in red is the top 10. Any number bold-faced is one that exceeds the national average, and the ones that are highlighted red or highlighted green are the top numbers. Now, this spreadsheet also contains some charts, so we can do things like bring it down to just Colorado and, say, Washington for the 12 to 17-year-olds, and when you go take a look at the associated chart, you will get just that information. And what we can see from the trends in the National Survey on Drug Use and Health is a precipitous decline in the monthly toking rates of teenagers in Colorado and Washington State. Colorado being the dark blue bar, Washington State being the light blue bar. In the past two surveys, a severe decline among those teenagers. And in fact, when we take a look at the numbers themselves, 9.08% of Colorado teenagers and 7.93% of Washington teenagers are current monthly tokers. Now, that is still above the national average of 6.75. But if we bring back the rest of the states, what you'll find when we sort by the relative drop over the past year in the monthly toking rate, we find Colorado is number one in the nation for the biggest decline over the past year in teens using marijuana. And we find Washington State is number five on the list with a 13.5% relative decline. We can also take a look at those numbers since 2012, since the legalization occurred in Washington and Colorado. And once again, we find that Colorado shows up, what, number six in the list at an 18.68% decline. Washington shows up at number four in the list with a 19.14% decline. So the proponents of prohibition who had warned us that legalizing marijuana would lead to sending a wrong message to the children, would lead to more access and more use by the youth, were completely wrong. They've been proven wrong now for two surveys in a row. But one thing that they did predict has come true. They predicted that by legalizing marijuana, we'd send this message to the kids that marijuana wasn't so harmful, that marijuana wasn't the deadly, dangerous demon reefer that was your egg in a frying pan and would lead straight to heroin and madness and murder. That is, the more kids are exposed to factual information about cannabis, the less they believe the reefer madness lies. And this is reflected in a survey question on the National Survey on Drug Use and Health regarding the harm of marijuana. How harmful do you believe marijuana is? And they asked these kids, 12 to 17 years old, do you find great risk in smoking marijuana once a month? Is that a big risk? So we can switch to that spreadsheet. Now, there is some missing data. I wasn't able to find this data released from the National Survey for the 2014-2015 year. So we can't do a past year comparison, but we can do a comparison from 2 years ago and a comparison to the 2012 information. And what we find is that the perception of harm among these kids, Colorado kids, is now sitting at 17.87%. Now, the 17.87% means that about 18% of kids think there is some harm in using marijuana on a regular basis, on a monthly basis. But that pales in comparison to some of the other states, most notably the state of Utah, where 40% of the kids think there is great harm in the regular use of marijuana. So the 17.87%, you'll notice, is highlighted in green there. That indicates that is the lowest perception of harm in the nation. In fact, let's do the sort, and you'll find there's Colorado, where 17% of the kids, almost 18% of the kids, think there is some harm. And notice how the legalization states are all clustered in the top six. Colorado, Washington, Alaska, D.C., Oregon, Maine, and then the rest are some medical states, right? So there does seem to be a correlation between the legalization or medicalization of cannabis and how little or how few teens think it's a harmful activity. As we get to the bottom of that list, the bottom 10, aside from New Jersey, North Dakota, and Arkansas, you find a whole bunch of prohibition states like Georgia, Louisiana, Texas, Alabama, Mississippi, and Utah, where more than a third of the kids think that marijuana is harmful. Now, the prediction by the prohibitionists was that this would happen, that we would see the kids in Colorado and Washington be less afraid of marijuana. But also consider what the result of that was predicted. They predicted that because the kids would find it less harmful, more kids would be using marijuana. So how is it that Colorado and Washington lead the nation in the fewest kids who think marijuana is harmful, and yet we've got that huge 2-year drop, which I have to make sure I get those two states on. Let's do it right here. Let's put Colorado and Washington back on the list. Here we go. So we get that huge 2-year drop in Colorado and Washington, despite the fact that those two states show the least number of kids who think marijuana is harmful. It seems to me that the message the kids have been getting is not that marijuana is some sort of harmless drug. The message they've been getting is that reefer madness is a lie. Is that all these reefer mad proclamations of how it would lead to lower IQ and your sperm count would drop and you'd have chromosomal damage and you'd have man boobs and you'd go straight to heroin. The kids aren't buying that anymore because in these legal states, they see adults responsibly using cannabis. They see responsible cannabis businesses and they understand they've been lied to. Now, the fear would be kids that have discovered that they've been lied to about marijuana may go on to think they were lied to about cocaine, lied to about methamphetamine, lied to about opioids. And most of what's been told about those drugs are not lies. They can be addictive. They can cause fatal overdoses. They can cause all sorts of problems in one's life. That's not to say everything the government said about other drugs is absolutely true either. But we all can acknowledge there's a mass chasm, a big chasm, between the harm possible through marijuana and the harm possible through some of those other drugs. And as we look at the other age groups, Kevin Sabet's been trying to massage these numbers. You know, he's not happy to see two straight declines in the teen use rates because that blows up a lot of his talking points. But he has said that, oh no, we've seen a huge increase in the amount of marijuana used by people 18 to 25. When we look at the state of Colorado, it shows up third in the list at about 32% of the kids 18 to 25, young adults, let's say, who are using cannabis monthly. And when we look at that as increases, we see the state of Colorado isn't even there in the list of biggest increases in the top 10. In fact, when we find the state of Colorado in our list, we find that it's only had a insignificant 1.4% increase in the 18 to 25 year olds who are using cannabis monthly, a increase that was below the national average. Now, Washington State has had a 6.53% increase in that youth or in that young adult use rate. And as this being a defense for Kevin Sabet and Project Sam, it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me because you're talking about most of the people in that demographic who have the legal right to use cannabis. Why wouldn't we expect them to be using it more? 21, 22, 23, 24, and 25, those are all legal ages to use cannabis. Now, as far as the 18, 19, and 20-year-olds who may be increasing their use of cannabis, while that is technically not legal in any of the states that have legalized adult use of cannabis, as far as I'm concerned, if you can vote for the man and put a rifle in your hand, you can put a joint in your hand. I don't understand. Well, I do understand why our laws have to have a 21 age, just because of the political aspect of it and the alcohol age being 21. But as far as I'm concerned, an adult should be an adult. If we trust you to join the army, pick a president, rent a car, and buy a long gun, and in some states, tobacco, we certainly should be able to trust you with a little bit of cannabis.
Yes, and I'd have gotten away with it too, if it wasn't for these blasted kids and their dogs.
All right, that sound means it's 3:20 here in the Pacific Time Zone. That means 4:20 in Colorado. Happy Rocky Mountain High to all our Mountain Time Zone listeners. We're going to take a short pause for the good cause. We got an anti-drug public service announcement coming up from the Partnership for a Drug-Free America. And then our Hemp Day Hump Day Update 2017 in review with Doug Fine. Stay tuned.
If you work in the cannabis industry, consume marijuana, or just support freedom, you need to know about breaking policy news that affects you. Marijuana Moment is the daily newsletter that helps you stay on top of all the latest and most important state, federal, and international cannabis developments. Brought to you by longtime legalization activist Tom Angel, Marijuana Moment puts a concise yet comprehensive overview of cannabis news in your inbox early every weekday morning. Wake up to Marijuana Moment and rest assured you'll be ready for the cannabis news that's driving the day. Subscribe now at marijuanamoment.net.
The Marijuana Agenda. Like the liberal agenda, but with profits. Ka-ching. The Marijuana Agenda free podcast is available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, SoundCloud, and on our Facebook page at MJ Agenda. Free video archives are available at the Radical Rust channel on YouTube. Help keep this media free by making a donation at paypal.me/radicalrus. Now, in the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Marijuana Agenda presents this anti-drug public service announcement.
Hi, it's Patsy. Today I'm going to demonstrate the Patsy pat-down. It's a way to check your kids for drugs without them even knowing it.
Hi, Beth. Give me a hug, honey.
I love you. That's a nice purse. Okay.
Don't be a patsy. Learn a better way from the partnership and our community partners.
This has been an actual anti-drug public service announcement. To combat this and other drug war hysteria, listen to the Marijuana Agenda every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific at live.mjagenda.com or download the free podcast at mjagenda.com.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
This whole country needs to not be so lackadaisical about drugs. They say much of the addiction starts with marijuana.
Whatever you're smoking, it's not marijuana.
Hey everybody, it's Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Jack Hare once said that hemp could save the planet. Today, we take a look at the non-drug use of the cannabis plant as fuel, fiber, food, and more. Now, let's restore hemp for victory in this Hemp Day Hump Day Update.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of our Hemp Day Hump Day Update, probably our last Hump Day Update for 2017, and I couldn't think of a better person to bring us the latest news and recap what happened this year in industrial hemp than our good friend Doug Fine, the author of Hemp Bound and Too High to Fail. Doug, welcome back to the program.
So great to be with you, Russ.
There's so much going on. This year was just another watershed year for the development of industrial hemp. We'll cover 2017 and what went down this year, but I understand you've got news for us, breaking news coming from three different states. Let's start with that.
Sure thing. I'll keep it to bullet points. First off, kudos to Pennsylvania, the original colonial era hemp leader. Hempfield is a township in Lancaster County, and Pennsylvania's coming on big this year. It's their second year, but they're going gangbusters, increasing their permit numbers by tenfold, allowing for cultivation of the flower and jamming. Kudos to Pennsylvania. Tale of two states. Washington, a state in which I'm active as a consultant for the Colville Tribes, which was the first federally permitted Native American hemp project this year, successful 60-acre project. Looking to expand and continue the market research, and all of a sudden, Washington State is saying, well, we're not sure we have the funding to even continue a program for next year. In fairness, the small but vocal group of people that are not going to give up have been talking to the highest levels of folks in the state about some kind of emergency funding. They need a couple, the Ag Department needs a couple hundred grand. The governor's discretionary budget already has turned it down, so it's kind of last-minute nail-biting for Washington. And then third state, I am an affiliated researcher with the University of Hawaii. I'm proud to report that the state of Hawaii's hemp seed development program is on track to get the first crop in the ground here in early 2018. Tough life for me. Means work trips to the tropics, but we are starting to develop seed. I and a lot of other skilled people are developing seed for Hawaii's coming hemp farmers.
That is fantastic news. And with the addition of these states like Pennsylvania and Hawaii, how many states do we have now in the United States with active hemp programs?
Something in the order of 30. With in 2017, Vote Hemp reporting 23,300 some permitted acres of hemp were planted last year, double the previous year, and that's starting from zero just 3 years ago. This industry will not be deterred, and I'm glad that you mentioned that, because anytime there are these sort of last remaining nonsensical hurdles to this most patriotic of crops, not just historically patriotic, but supporting our rural communities from a straight bottom line perspective, helping farmers feed their families. Anytime there are states that are not taking that responsibility seriously and going full bore ahead, I am hundreds of others, or 800 and something permitted farmers last year, I'm sure there will be more coming this year, are looking, we're way beyond that. We're past the finish line and thinking about how to build a world-renowned hemp industry here in the U.S. and will not be deterred. States like New York are taking no guff from any backward, rear-view-looking nonsense about some old drug war. Governor Cuomo, kudos, $30 million or something bucks, whatever it was, allocated to his hemp program, answering that chicken and egg. Well, great, but how do we can plant hemp, but how do we process? It costs a lot of money. He said that's important enough to our state and to our farmers and to our future for our economy and our families to fund it from the state. So good going, New York.
And that is an important part of this development of the hemp industry, is you can plant all the hemp you want, but if you got nowhere to process it and no way to turn it into consumer goods, what good is it? Where are we in that development aside from New York? Have other states taken on the infrastructure element of hemp?
I would say that most applications for hemp are doable in either existing or easily acquirable processing equipment.
Is this a situation where we can convert certain, like, you know, I know here in the state of Oregon, there was a massive timber industry and it kind of went under a little bit. And is there a conversion factor here where we can take old industries and repurpose them for hemp?
Yeah, although not necessarily what you would think. So, for instance, on the seed side, the food side of hemp, the Omega Balance Superfood hemp seed is legal to buy and eat everywhere. It's in every supermarket. That end of it is just about oil presses with some modification. That's not rocket surgery or whatever it is.
It's rocket surgery or brain science.
Or brain science, exactly. It's that's just about pressing seeds, which is I've done with the project that I've been cultivating with, and that's routine. And then on the flower side, it's thank you cannabis, thank you all people who know how to extract from herbs, because that helps you extract the cannabinoids and other elements from the hemp plant as well. It's the fiber side where the processing infrastructure is the largest. I was just talking to a friend about this the other day who had an interest in hemp rope. Whenever somebody asks me about a large-scale industrial hemp operation, I send them this link, a YouTube link, of processors in Hungary and Romania. These people are using machinery that, don't get me wrong, this stuff was built to last, but probably comes from the 50s. It looks like you'd think you were watching communist propaganda film, but it was last year, just based on the overalls and the dangerous, loud steel machinery chunking along, doing the decortication of the fiber and helping this, world's strongest fiber outside of spider webs, get into things like textiles and rope. So if you want to get into that business, you're going to have to be innovative and smart, and humans, let alone Americans, have been able to do that forever. But even fiber is somehow managing to be one of the fastest growing applications. When I wrote Hempbound in 2014, it was sort of the forgotten child, and I was a big advocate for, and still am, for energy. As we convert to a more solar economy, you can do good anaerobic type heating, and people do it from biomass, including hemp, which produces a lot of biomass per acre, some of the most of any crop. But beyond that, what's taken off is a couple of different areas in fiber. One is the herd, which is the inner core. Hemp building is a big growth industry, and hemp herd is great for that. It also is fantastic for things like animal bedding. It's antimicrobial, and the Queen of England, who must know, beds her horses on hemp herd. So fiber is still doable without the massive investment that we need, but the fact is, if there is one element where somebody insists on writing a $5 to $10 million check to get a big infrastructure project going, I would say that would be in fiber processing for both important traditional, like paper substitute applications, rope applications, and next generation fiber applications like industrial plastics and next generation supercapacitors.
Those are two developments I'm very interested in, the hemp plastics and the supercapacitors. With the hemp plastic side of things, how does that fold in with the development of 3D printing technology?
It's a beautiful convergence. A lot of what's so nice about the renaissance in hemp is that it's allowing the branches of a very healthy tree, I think, to form. One of them has to do with a renaissance in independent farming in general. Farmers able to help make a lucrative living, especially if they're working in sync with other members of their community, by keeping the product value chain in the community as it goes up the value chain, and farmers not just getting sort of wholesale prices and ripped off by buyers and wholesalers, as has been often the case since the end of serfdom. And the other one is the digital age convergence, which is, I was really thrilled for a TV show that I'm doing to film some of the first 3D printing of hemp fibers. And it's not rocket science, again, to make. It's a pretty easy thing to make these coils of plastic that go into 3D printing. And it's ready. It's ready for prime time in terms of what they call a PLA-type plastic.
That is amazing. And, of course, the other development, this is a really recent development. I think maybe it was this year or last year, where they came up with the idea that hemp could be used to make supercapacitor battery technology. I'm excited about this. Tell our listeners what the future holds for hemp and batteries.
Well, not even just make next-generation nanotechnology and our next-generation batteries that today often comes from rare earth materials that involve some environmental and political, issues, but outperforming any other known material in what we call graphene, this sort of nano level carbon that goes into our next generation supercapacitors. Battery technology, it's not, again, it's getting closer to rocket science, Russ, but it's not that complicated. But an important thing for folks to know is that in next generation battery technology, and actually in all battery technology and electronics, we're not just talking about battery storage, storing energy. That's important. We're talking about the ability of the battery to efficiently transfer that energy, and that's where the super capacitors come in. And hemp, because of, thank God for evolution, the way that the molecules have evolved at the nano level on this plant, they are sort of folded over one another, creating a lot of unusual amount of surface area, and outperforming any unknown material at fraction of the cost, and not to mention environmental costs and political costs. So this is not a joke. David Mittman released this. He was then with the University of Manitoba, and he's out of Clarkson College, who released this study at the American Chemical Society. I think it was now getting on 2 years ago at the American Chemical Society convention. So this is not, and I always like to say, you know, ain't nothing wrong with hippies, but this is not a hippie announcement. This was a academic announcement, and the guy was not a, he was an agnostic. He was not, and he still, to this day, is not a peace sign throwing preacher. He just simply is saying, this is going to be the market for supercapacitors because it performs the best.
And that, of course, is the solution to many of our alternative energy technologies, wind, solar, tidal, and such, is the need to store that energy when it's not sunny or windy or the tide is out. And the battery yeah. technology right now is so expensive, it's kind of a wash cost-wise, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So, you know, and again, there's so many kinds of costs that we figure in, which I think, you know, by way of sort of reflecting on this past year in hemp, to my mind, what I'm really excited about and interested in seeing is the fact that some of the lessons that we've learned from watching the last 100 years of capitalism, and also those of us who believe in plant intelligence and who have learned anything from relationships to various plants that help us in our lives through food or whatever, have come to realize that, you know, there is a way to still be entrepreneurial and have a system that, you know, rewards hard work and all that good stuff without sort of tearing down the infrastructure of society, but also by writing out, should one desire to write these folks out, writing out far-off stock exchanges, hedge funds, whatever it is, whose interest in the well-being of the community producing the goods might not be as vested as those who actually live in a community. And we're actually making it such that keeping the economy regional is starting to seem really feasible. That's one of the really beautiful things. And there have been a few times over the last couple of, or even over the last year, where colleagues of mine, whom I really respect, have gotten really stressed out because big money is moving into at some realm of the cannabis hemp era arena. And my answer to that is, we knew that was going to happen. Did we think capital, you know, the big kind of old capital that we don't like, in the big banks and all the populist things that we don't like about the way the capitalism has been going for the last 100 years, did we think that they were simply going to ignore this huge growth industry? Of course not.
Right,
but we,
right.
as the pioneers, have a choice. We can write them out of it and keep this economy regional and local. I think that was the theme of 2017 in hemp.
Fantastic. And Doug Fine, of course, your website is dougfine.com and can be found on Twitter at Organic Cowboy. Check out the books Hemp Bound and Too High to Fail. And what else have you got going on lately?
Oh, thanks for asking. By the way, Hemp Day Hump Day is one of my favorite things. Whenever we have one coming up, I always I'm excited because it's a real opportunity to talk about the big picture issues. When I'm doing more mainstream discussion, I have to sometimes take a step or two back and explain the bigger picture or why we shouldn't be worrying about THC levels or all these basic things. But we're talking about saving humanity and next generation economies, Russ. So I so appreciate what you do. To answer your question briefly, other than the kind of things you've mentioned, I'll be at the Maui Cannabis Conference January 5th and 6th speaking about hemp for folks who want to take a vacation to Maui. And I will be, I'm consistently filming for this TV show called The Family Farmer Adventure Hour. So folks, do follow me at Organic Cowboy, as you kindly mentioned. When that show is ready to air, folks will know about it. And I'm really, really excited about it because it's journalistic, but I hope it's also funny and it profiles the farmers doing the things we've been talking about today.
Well, there you have it, folks. 2017, the year in hemp with our friend Doug Fine. And thank you so much for joining us, as always, on this Hemp Day Hump Day update. We look forward to talking to you again in 2018.
I look forward to it, too. Thanks, Russ.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. MJAgenda.com.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is brought to you by Cannabis Kamikaze, a professional licensed producer from Canada producing 3 pounds per light. Follow Cannabis Kamikaze on Twitter at Cannabis Kamikaze. That's at Cannabis, K-A-M-I-K-A-Z, Cannabis Kamikaze.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Law enforcement is a part of the answer. It's part of creating a climate of hostility to drug use in America.
Whatever you're smoking, it's not marijuana. Despite what you may have heard, CBD is not, quote, legal in all 50 states. The DEA is quite clear that cannabidiol is a Schedule I controlled substance banned in all 50 states. Think about it. Why would 17 states pass laws legalizing CBD, and why would there be 3 bills in Congress to legalize CBD federally if CBD were already legal in all 50 states?
Health Cannabinoid, your ACMPR experts. Consultation services for medical cannabis. Visit healthcannabinoid.com or call 1-800-906-1383. That's www.healthcannabinoid.com or call 1-800-906-1383. Health Cannabinoid.
Total war against public enemy number one.
10 federal criminal penalties for up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs.
I am ill.
That was the point.
I think it would be a mistake to leave a state.
Negative reports coming out of Colorado.
Don't smoke marijuana.
Well, today my ire was raised by a retweet from High Times magazine. It says, "Slow day, Officer Thomas," and is headed as "Police Bust of the Week, hashtag serve and protect." And it shows the picture of, it looks like a younger looking police officer in his tactical vest and his, you know, got all his gear. And it is also got the tweet from the Lawrenceville Police Department. I think this is Lawrenceville, Georgia. And the tweet from the police department reads, "Traffic stop yields approximately 7 grams of suspected marijuana. Good work, Officer Thomas." And so the cop is sitting there at a table that's got a couple little jars with 7 grams of marijuana and a joint alongside of it. So, or as we call it here in Oregon, just about out of marijuana. So this also, you can kind of see the first comment on the tweet notes it, is that he appears to have a big lump of chewing tobacco in the side of his mouth there, too. So just to add a little irony to the entire picture. But the Lawrenceville Police Department thought they needed to brag about this 7-gram bust by Officer Thomas. They wanted to show the community what a great job they're doing in Lawrenceville, Georgia, with this 1/4 ounce of marijuana. And I thought that the taxpayers in the Lawrenceville, Georgia area ought to know, ought to have some idea how their taxpayer money got spent to bust what is worth 90 to 100 bucks in the Atlanta area. So I looked it up. You know me, I look shit up. Lawrenceville Police Department's average salary for an officer is $38,426 a year. So an average that works out to about $19.21 an hour. Now, the average bust for anything, but particularly weed, is going to take about 4 hours of a cop's time. When you consider the time it takes for the pulling them over, the frisk, the search, the cuff, get them in the car, take them into the department, do the fingerprinting, do the mug shot, sit around, do the paperwork, put them in the cell. And then when the trial comes up, the cop gets overtime to go out there and testify in the trial that, yeah, he busted this guy with weed. Works out to an average about 4 hours. So at $19.21 an hour, 1921 times 4 hours, works out to $76.84 of cop time that it took to take $90 to $100 worth of weed off the streets. Now, that's just the cops' time. You also got to consider all of the materiel that went into dealing with this arrest. Now, the annual gas and maintenance on a cop car, because this is a traffic stop, remember? Bust him in traffic stop. Annual gas and maintenance on a cop car is about $8,609. And then, when you have this case go to trial, you have to send the weed in to the crime lab. Crime lab has to test this green leafy substance to prove beyond a shadow of doubt in a court of law that it is in fact a Schedule I controlled substance called cannabis. So the crime lab tech, got to have at least one crime lab tech that's working on this this test, that works out to $36,039 a year for the average crime lab tech salary in Georgia. That's about $18.02 an hour to test weed. So even if it just took an hour, and I don't know what the time is it takes for these tests, but even if it just took an hour to process that 7 grams of weed, we're talking about another $18 on top of the $76 that we already added in earlier. So let's see, $18.02. So now we're up to $94.86 of cost, and not counting the car cost. I'm not adding the car cost in here. This is just the salary cost. $94.86 to take $90 to $100 worth of weed. But also consider some of the opportunity costs that are involved in this. The 4 hours that the cop is spent on this 7 grams of weed is 4 hours he's not spending enforcing traffic laws, going after deadbeat dads, stopping crimes in progress, dealing with domestic abuse, whatever it might be. That cop's out of action dealing with that 7 grams of weed. Then think of the opportunity costs that we've got at the crime lab. We have a crisis of a backlog in rape kit testing. A recent story that I had read showed, after testing thousands of these rape kits, that there were hundreds of serial rapists that have gone undetected, who've gone unpunished. And they were able to tell because, you know, we got the same DNA in 3, 4, 5, 6 rape kits. We've got serial rapists out there. And the kits from these crimes not being tested, backlogged, because they got to spend all this time testing other stuff. They got to test the little baggie of weed. They got to little test the baggie of coke. They got to test the little baggie of heroin. They got to make sure the drug is really the drug. Does anyone think that this bust for 7 grams of weed that Officer Thomas of the Lawrenceville, Georgia Police Department pulled off helped anything, solved anything? It certainly didn't end the smoking of weed in the Atlanta area. Certainly didn't end the trade in cannabis throughout the state of Georgia. All it's doing is keeping that price of that 7 grams of weed up to the $90 to $100 an ounce range. That's all the war on drugs does, folks. It is a price support subsidy for illegal weed dealers. That's all it is. It's what allows people to charge $400 an ounce for a product that costs $25 to $50 an ounce to grow. And that's going to continue to happen so long as we continue to have these small town and small minded police departments who think they are bragging that they've done something great for the community when they've busted someone for a quarter ounce of weed. The people clearly don't want this. We got 64% of the United States public in opinion polls now saying we ought to just legalize this. Even in the state of Georgia, this is not a popular position. At most, people will support a decriminalization where there's a fine if you're caught with marijuana and the marijuana is confiscated. But spending cop time will still happen under decriminalization to process those tickets, to deal with the search. It's time to just end this foolishness, this madness that in no way reduces anyone's ability to get weed, to use weed. All it does is it maintains an artificial price support. All it does is maintains busy work for cops, easy work for them rather than doing the hard work of chasing down real criminals. And if this case with the 7 ounces or 7 grams of weed wasn't enough for you, take a look around on the web. You'll see the case of the, I think it was a Georgia football player maybe it was University of Georgia, I'm not exactly sure, where they found he was busted for a speck. They showed the picture next to a penny, and a little speck of weed was 0.02 grams. It was less, like, one-fourth the size of a penny. Now, those charges got dropped after that tweet went and that picture went viral. And, of course, because he's a football player in the SEC. But it goes to show, once again, how insane this war on drugs is, how much money we're flushing down the toilet, how many lives and families and communities we're ruining in a futile pursuit of trying to stop people from growing and consuming a plant that our founding fathers grew. All right, that's all the time we got for today's show. Thanks for joining us. We'll have more news and interviews you can use tomorrow on the Marijuana Agenda, live at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Radical Rust Channel on YouTube. You can also find the Marijuana Agenda podcast everywhere, iTunes, and now on Spotify. Check it out.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
For everyone here at Delta 9 Nelson Studios, I'm Radical Russ Belleville. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, take care of each other, jokers.
You're planning, you're growing, you're trying, you're rolling, you're smoking. You take a seat, you're planning, you're growing, you're trying, you're rolling, you're smoking, and it goes down smooth.